I was wondering if you could explain a bit what Princeton and the architect were looking for in this design. What are some of the main thoughts and elements that went into how this was built?
Certainly one of the things that the architects sort of emphasize is the degree to which they studied the Princeton campus with an eye to seeing how exactly it is arranged spatially. So, for example, they noticed that while at many universities that feature quadrangles, the all four sides of the quadrangles have buildings on them, in most places, right? At Princeton, almost all quote-unquote quads are actually three-sided. They're U-shaped, right? And so, in fact, this is true of the building as well. And for them, that bespoke of an interest to make sure that the university felt open and welcoming, right? I don't know if you've ever read Thomas Hardy's Jude the Obscure, but a lot of attention is given to how closed off Jude feels from Oxford University because of these quads, right? Because of the way the colleges are built. It just feels like that's a whole other world and he can't get into it. So they wanted to respect that aspect of things. They're very interested in the extension of the walk down from Nassau Street. The landscaping sort of was done by Beatrix Ferrand, and late 19th, early 20th century. She did a lot of the landscaping on campus, also in Central Park. So there's a whole row of magnolias featured there. So they wanted to make sure they built in such a way to extend the walk and also extend that row of magnolias right up to this building.
Like this welcome in that sense, that you're really guiding the public, not only people on campus, but as Michael said, guiding people in so they feel that they can have some engagement, stake in this space.
And then this area, in Princeton, if you came in on Alexander Road, it always felt like you were coming in the back door to the town, right? And sometimes took you a while to figure out you were actually at in Princeton and at the university. And so both in terms of the building of a new Dinky station, putting this right next to that Dinky station, having the largest open window being, in relation to the Dinky station and a parking lot, that was a way of kind of saying, oh, yeah, come on along. And so now when you arrive from Alexander Street, you look at this complex and you go,
so different.
I think I'm somewhere.
I was thinking that driving in this morning and parking in the garage, this is just that sense of arriving and that you're really somewhere. And that with the restaurants next door now, we've got the Dinky Bar and Cargo, these really quite lovely restaurants. So you're really coming here can be an event. You could get off the Dinky station, go over and have a cocktail, come to something here, and it would really work as a kind of harmonious whole.
Mm-hmm. And because the McCarter has been here in this location for a very long period of time, and then we added the Berlin Theater to the McCarter across the street from the Dinky stations, this was, had always been, the Arts and Transit neighborhood. And so in a way, by using that expression, we were kind of saying, yes, and it will remain the Arts and Transit neighborhood, but now a better looking one, a more inviting one, one that is for the use of students who are interested in our particular arts, to be sure, but one that, our arts are completed by having audiences. And so that part of it is key as well. And then it's sort of great, as you can imagine, great for the kids in Forbes College across the street here. They've always felt that their college was located in Lawrenceville, which is to say, a number of miles away from the Princeton campus. In fact, it's really was always across the street. But now to have a major facility, literally across the street, with an area in the building, a passageway through the building that goes right over to Forbes, I think they're feeling the love.
I think another thing that the architects were very good about thinking about is creating these buildings in a way that both opened up these possibilities for collaboration at the level of the forum so that we can really work with each other more and in different ways, but also respecting the very different natures of the three arts. So when you look at the building, you'll notice that they use different materials for the three buildings, that there's a different character, that the so-called dancing stairway that goes up, that beautiful stairway, has a certain look. The music building is all about wood and this sort of that sense of, I decided when we were in the rehearsal room the other day, that it was like listening to music inside a musical instrument, you know, as if you're in a space that is a resonating box, right? And that wood, you know, we think of great instruments, we think mostly of, you know, violins and cellos and basses and, you know, these wonderful wooden and pianos that use wood in a way. So I think that sense of both distinguishing the different buildings according to the arts in this kind of material fashion, and at the same time opening up the possibilities for us to meld in different ways was really, really great. Because if they looked at it as, okay, I'm giving you guys something and you guys just have to all be the same, that wouldn't have worked for us. I mean, part of what's been so much fun for Michael and I as we do our roadshow is really celebrating what we do, the values that we share, and then the things that we do that are different, and how great that is, how that contributes to life at Princeton in so many different ways.
Everyone's always talking about the cutting edge in technology. I know this is certainly a state-of-the-art building. Give our listeners an idea of one or two technological elements that really show how technology is being brought into arts and arts education.
Well, actually, you know, to speak about simply the design of the building, you know, one of the things was we're going to have these performance spaces. And when we first started talking about the building, we brought on a woman who worked with us often as a lighting designer to advise us. I mean, we had theater, you know, advisory group sort of, you know, that sort of was hired as part of the building of the building. But we wanted someone we worked with and who knew especially about lights. And the first question that came up was LED lighting. You know, sort of, should we be planning for that? And she said, listen, there's no question that in some time down the road, that's what we're going to be doing. There's also no question that we can't do it now, right? The instruments are too rudimentary. The light is pretty terrible, you know, on the human body, right? Sort of, you know, so, you know, 2 years later, we're having the conversation. She's going, you know, sort of things are beginning to progress a bit. So I definitely build in such a way that, you know, this is, again, talking about the future. Half the instruments, you know, sort of would be, you know, sort of the kind we use now, and sort of half, you know, sort of these LED things. 2 years later, sort of the architects literally came in with a prototype and said, check this out. And she went, okay, I think we're there. Because it was going to be another 2 years before we were actually ordering instruments. So now all the lighting sort of is in the theaters is LED, right? Sort of, you know, and, you know, talking with her about it, she said sort of something similar happened in sound technology in the theater, sort of, you know, I can't speak to music, about 10 years before, where within a 24-month span, everything changed. And one of the ways you could register the change is drama schools like Yale suddenly added sound design programs, right? You know, because clearly this is going to be something sort of, you know, that you were going to have to, every production was going to have someone in this area. And she said, now the same thing, sort of, you know, a couple of entrepreneurs, you know, who were designers, sort of decided to tackle the lighting thing. Our architects had designed the addition to a great museum in Kansas City, and they said, listen, the museum people have gone over to this, and that standard is a very high one, as you can imagine. And so sort of when Jane said, sort of the same thing happened. Within about a 24-month period, suddenly the LED was there, you know, and so this semester we have a kid teaching a course, you know, and it's kind of about theater and technology, And you can take this course either as what we call an LA course, so it's a literature and the arts course, you know, humanities type course, or you can take it as a QR course, a quantitative reasoning course, right? And there are, I think it's the class has something like 24 people in it, but there's actually a waiting list of about 15 for each side of that, because students are very interested in this place at which art meets technology. And I'm proud to say he himself is a Princeton graduate from the class of 2004. He was a computer science major with certificates in theater and in Italian. You know, and this is exactly what a liberal arts education of a kind that, you know, is at the center of what we do can lead to.
I think for us there are a couple of different ways in which it manifests itself. As I mentioned earlier, in the acoustic design. I mean, the fact that in our rehearsal room, the acoustics are adjustable, and you can say, I don't know if you can go all the way from, you know, St. Paul's Cathedral to an absolutely dead recording studio, but there is a range of adjustability, and that is huge. And the acoustic engineers worked as well with the sound, building these rooms that literally do not touch each other in order to create that. So I think that's a really large part of this. I think the other thing that this does in a way is that technology, you know, with the Princeton Laptop Orchestra, which is more than really just laptops, as wonderful as laptops are, but the kind of work that's being done by Jeffrey Snyder, who was a research associate in our department, but is now a senior lecturer and director of the program in electronic music. And he is one of the people who teaches a lot of courses that are cross-listed in science and technology and in the arts, because he is so, you know, so really brilliant about inventing instruments. He's the one who sort of will invent instruments that do all kinds of things. And so for the opening weekend, one of the things that will be happening, I think, every night is a special fanfare that was composed for this particular building that deals with a combination of lighting that Jane Cox, who Michael just mentioned, director of the theater program, and Jeffrey Snyder and people from the program in architecture have worked on, that will be electronic music and brass and lighting design in the forum in a way that takes advantage of the peculiarities of the light coming through the water and that really works with the oddities and idiosyncratic things of our building. So I think that is a real moment where if anybody comes by for that fanfare, they would really be able to sort of see architecture, lighting design, you know, acoustic music with brass, electronic music, all working together to create a theatrical experience with light and sound. And so that's kind of great. We started planning that about a year ago, and I'm really excited to see that come to fruition.